I started a subject last night as I returned to the Great Pyramid of Egypt. It never was a tomb, never was intended to be a tomb. The so-called cartouche of Khufu was a forgery put there by Colonel Voss. There are no hieroglyphics in the Great Pyramid. It wasn't built by Khufu. It was there when Khufu became Pharaoh. The word means light. Covered with white limestone, it shined like a jewel, so bright its reflections from the sun could be seen as far away as Palestine. It meant light. Khufu took the name of the pyramid, not the other way around. Wasn't built, as the Egyptologists say, around 2500 BC. It was there when those old kingdoms emerged. Then we turn to the Sphinx. West is convincingly proven. NBC carried a special that the Sphinx has erosion from water, not wind and sand. Oh yeah, wind and sand in the near history. But the majority of the erosion on the Sphinx is from water. That pushes the timeline back to more than 10,000 BC. The Bible clearly speaks of ancient times, ancient peoples, smarter than we are, closer to God, the source of all knowledge, than we are, who accomplish things that we couldn't accomplish. Now, this nonsense that Adam was created in 4004 BC is from a medieval monk trying to interpret genealogy tables with the mentality of those that thought the earth was flat and that the sun went around the earth. Between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, there is a vast gulf of time. In the beginning, God created, or as the Hebrew would have it, the beginning of God's creation. Jeremiah saw a past tense vision, said it was created not a waste. Then the second verse in the King James says the earth was without form and void. Now, just as legitimate, the earth became a waste and a desolation. And that's the way it's translated in Jeremiah's prophecy. When a great cataclysm strikes the earth, mountains move at a time before there was any man. Yet there were Ayar, which are meeting places of intelligent beings, translated cities in the King James. And some great cataclysm struck the earth, and it became a waste and a desolation. The Bible speaks of cyclical advances and catastrophes and startovers. The application of evolution to social history stretches it a bit, because it assumes that everything has always happened the same way, and man has progressed from the Stone Age through the Bronze Age, through iron, bronze, right on up, ever progressing upward. Not so. Nobody in the world today could build a pyramid as it was built in Egypt. with the magnificent qualities that we talked about last night. The Sphinx was built before a time of water erosion, when it's 60 feet to the height of the shoulders of the Sphinx. There was somebody back there, real smart. The Bible has people that were living 700, 800, 900 years. You have any idea how smart you would be if you could live that long? I've learned more the last 5 years than I did all the other years of my life. Knowledge compounds. I did a PhD at Stanford. Didn't learn as much in the 9.5 years pursuing all the degrees that led me to the PhD as I have the last 5 years. God, I'd be smart if I could live to be 700. The pyramid was not built by some Stone Age guys that said the other night his wife had a headache or PMS, and he went out running out of the cave swinging his stone axe, knocking rocks around, and just happened to align the pyramid to true north and make it a perfect replica of the northern half of the globe and find the spot on the globe where it would crosshair the greatest landmass, the center of the landmasses of the earth. You run a line down north and south and east and west through its position. It ought to be mean time, not Greenwich. Containing in its mathematical formulas that wonderful measuring unit of pyramid inch, which is 1/500,000,000th of the distance from the north to the south pole, so perfectly aligned to true north that scientists have been amazed that a building so massive could be perfectly aligned in that way. Containing in its dimensions the calendar that we use, the earth around the sun, and the 365 1/4, loosely speaking, days of the year, the sidereal calendar, which is when the earth returns to a fixed position in relation to a fixed star. And the anomalistic year, which takes into account the elliptical orbit and perihelion, when the earth is closest to the sun in its elliptical orbit and returns to that point. They knew all of this. They encompassed pi, the golden mean. A building so large you could put our capital, Notre Dame, and Westminster Abbey inside of it and still have space. 70-ton blocks hewed in 5x7 joints, 35 square feet, with a deviation of these limestone blocks, 70 tons in weight, joined together in joints, 35 feet square, with a deviation, a mean deviation of 1/50 of an inch. Somebody back there was smart. Now, from the pyramid, I'm going to Fingerprints of the Gods, Graham Hancock. I'll repeat something I did several weeks ago. This is a response to a letter written by Charles H. Hapgood, 8th Reconnaissance Technical Squadron, SAC, United States Air Force, Westover Air Force Base, Massachusetts, July 6, 1960. The subject, Admiral Peary Reese World Map. From Harold Z. Olmeyer, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Air Force Commander, Westover Air Force Base, to Professor Charles H. Hapgood, Keene College, Keene, New Hampshire. Dear Professor Hapgood, your request for evaluation of certain unusual features of the Peary Reese World Map of 1513 by this organization has been reviewed. Admiral Peary Reese produced this map from sources that must have matriculated from Alexandria to Constantinople, still available to him when this admiral produced the map. 8th Reconnaissance Technical Squadron, United States Air Force, Lieutenant Colonel Harold Z. Olmeyer responds to a request to evaluate certain features. And I read, your request for evaluation of certain unusual features of the Peary Reese World Map of 1513 by this organization has been reviewed. The claim that the lower part of the map portrays the Princess Martha coast of Queen Maud Land, Antarctica, and the Palmer Peninsula is reasonable. We find this is the most logical and in all probability the correct interpretation of the map. The geographical detail shown in the lower part of the map agrees very remarkably with the results of the seismic profile made across the top of the ice cap by the Swedish-British Antarctica expedition of 1949. This indicates the coastline had been mapped before it was covered by the ice cap. The ice cap in this region is now about a mile thick. We have no idea how the data on this map can be reconciled with the supposed state of geographical knowledge in 1513. Now, the Peary Reese map, which is a genuine document, not a hoax of any kind, was made at Constantinople in AD 1513. It focuses on the western coast of Africa, the eastern coast of South America, and the northern coast of Antarctica, which now is under a mile deep ice cap. Peary Reese could not have acquired his information on Antarctica from contemporary explorers because Antarctica remained undiscovered until 1818, more than 300 years after he drew the map. The ice-free coast of Queen Maud Land, shown in the map, is a colossal puzzle because the geological evidence confirms that the latest date it could have been surveyed and charted in an ice-free condition is 4,000 BC, 6,000 years ago. It is not possible to pinpoint the earliest date that such a task could have been accomplished, but it seems that the Queen Maud Land littoral may have remained in a stable, unglaciated condition for at least 9,000 years before the spreading ice cap swallowed it entirely. There is no civilization known to history that had the capacity or need to survey that Antarctica coastline in the relevant period between 13,000 BC and 4,000 BC. In other words, the true enigma of this 1513 map is not so much its inclusion of a continent not discovered until 1818, but its portrayal of part of the coastline of that continent under ice-free conditions, which came to an end 6,000 years ago and have not since recurred. He drew the map from sources . This won't show you the detail, but this is the map on the right side where my finger is here. The Peary Reese map was drawn from sources available to him that show Antarctica's coastline free of ice . And the scientific expedition referred to by the U.S. commander with seismic detail and modern scientific instruments to penetrate the ice and map the coastline, show the rivers and the mountains in exactly the places that the Peary Reefs map shows them. The Peary Reefs map, ice-free, the scientific survey mapping the contour underneath the ice exactly as the Peary Reefs map showed it. In his day, Peary Reefs was a well-known figure. His historical identity is firmly established. An admiral in the Navy of the Ottoman Turks, he was involved, often on the winning side, in numerous sea battles around the mid-16th century. He was, in addition, considered an expert on the lands of the Mediterranean, was the author of a famous sailing book, which provided a comprehensive description of the coasts, harbors, currents, shallows, landing places, bays, and straits of the Aegean and Mediterranean seas. Despite this illustrious career, he fell foul of his masters and was beheaded in A.D. 1554 or 1555. The source maps Peary Reefs used to draw up his 1513 map were in all probability lodged originally in the Imperial Library at Constantinople, to which the admiral is known to have enjoyed privileged access. Those sources, which may have been transferred or copied from even more ancient centers of learning, no longer exist or at any rate have not been found. It was, however, in the library of the old imperial palace at Constantinople that the Peary Reefs map was discovered, painted on a gazelle skin, and rolled up on a dusty shelf as recently as 1929. As the baffled Olmeyer admitted in his letter to Hapgood in 1960, the Peary Reefs map depicts the subglacial topography, the true profile of Queen Maud Land, Antarctica, beneath the ice. This profile remained completely hidden from view from 4000 BC until it was revealed again as a result of the comprehensive seismic survey of Queen Maud Land carried out during 1949. By a joint British-Swedish scientific reconnaissance team. If Peary Reefs had been the only cartographer with access to such anomalous information, I started on the pyramid last night teaching. From all these different sources, the idea of the earliest intelligent man, Adam, for want of a better term, appearing on the scene in 4004 BC, based upon a medieval monk's genealogical analysis, when the genealogy tables are as unreliable as two and three generations each time. Sons or grandsons, great-grandsons, nephews, sons, the words used loosely. No way possible you could get the age of mankind descended from Adam through genealogy tables. Don't blame the Bible for what a medieval monk stuck his head in some orifice and came up with. The Bible, as I've said, has a vast gulf of time between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. Other passages equally significant that I'll get to. And now I'm pushing from many sources the evidence of ancient civilizations dating back before what we know to be the Ice Age covering Antarctica. If Peary Reefs had been the only cartographer with access to such anomalous information, we might not place such a great weight, Hapgood says, but I would. But anyway, I'll go on with him as the one. At the most, one might say, perhaps it is significant, but then again, perhaps it's just a coincidence. Come on, Hapgood, you're being too nice. It ain't no coincidence somebody maps the contours verified by seismic investigation in 1949 in an area in 1513 that hadn't been discovered until 1818. And has the topography exactly as the 1949 survey shows it, beneath a mile of ice. Man, that playing it down too much. You didn't have to say that to get me to listen to the other cartographers. However, the Turkish admiral was by no means alone in the possession of seemingly impossible and inexplicable geographical knowledge. You know, academics really need to learn. I may be the only academic in the world that when I know something's right will look at the idiots and say, up yours. I mean, I get so tired of academicians trying to sound humble. Perhaps it is significant, but then again, perhaps it's just a coincidence. Huh? Excuse me? However, the Turkish admiral was by no means alone. Why not just say, not only this, but these others? I ain't going to listen to that apology for moving to the next phase. To hell with the academicians. They keep their head up their orifices, that's their problem. In the Christmas recess, there are other maps, is what he's trying to say. Not just Pee-wee. Not just Pee-wee Reese. Are you awake?
Yes, sir.
In the Christmas recess of 1959-60, Charles Hapgood was looking for Antarctica in the reference room of the Library of Congress, Washington, D.C. For several consecutive weeks, he worked there, lost in the search, surrounded by literally hundreds of medieval maps and charts. I found, he reported, many fascinating things I had not expected to find, and a number of charts showing the southern continent. Then one day I turned a page and sat transfixed as my eyes fell upon the southern hemisphere of a world map drawn by Orontius Phinaeus in 1531. I had the instant conviction that I had found here a truly authentic map of the real Antarctica. Still 300 years, minus maybe 11, or a few, before Antarctica was discovered. The general shape of the continent was startlingly like the outline of the continent on our modern maps. The position of the South Pole, nearly in the center of the continent, seemed about right. And all these people running around, particularly the fundamentalists, carrying on their stupid fight with evolution. I mean, evolution's a theory to explain a sequential laying down of strata and a sequential progress from the simple to the complicated in the development of life forms. It's just a theory. You can't prove it, but it's about the best theory to come along. You don't have to choose between God and evolution. If I were God, I'd probably do it the same way. Time means nothing to him. He's before and he's after. I believe that there is built into the universe a positive element. Faith works, whether you have faith in God or not. But then they apply evolution, over-apply it. That everything has to proceed at the same rate all the time. And the fundamentalists are out there parking their brains and saying God gave the King James to Adam and Eve as his first act in the garden. I'm exaggerating a bit, but you don't have to choose between science and the Bible. At no place does the Bible suggest the short time span that we've been taught in fundamentalist circles to believe. I've already said there's a vast gulf of time between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. Both Ezekiel and Isaiah saw Satan in Eden before he fell. And you encounter him after Genesis 1:2 in a fallen state. I've already said Jeremiah saw the earth before there was Adam. And yet there were cities. King James says, Ayar, meeting places of intelligent beings. We don't know how long and how many times things happened on the earth before God broods over it. Then comes the cataclysm of the flood. You haven't got an accurate date on the flood. You can't use genealogies for that. We don't know when the flood occurred. We just know there's a worldwide accordance that this earth has been smitten by a terrible flood, whether completely covering every part of it or not, enough of it that every culture has memory traces of it. You'll know the date of the flood. Quit reducing God down from a size much larger than our minds have been able to comprehend into one little peanut-sized God that fits your view of Him. And how many people out there have ever studied ancient maps? Yet their knee-jerk reaction is, oh no, this couldn't be. Well, you listen. The general shape of the continent was startlingly like the outline of the continent on our modern maps. The position of the South Pole, nearly in the center of the continent, seemed about right. The mountain ranges that skirted the coasts suggested the numerous ranges that have been discovered in Antarctica in recent years. It was obvious, too, that this was no slapdash creation of somebody's imagination. The mountain ranges were individualized, some definitely coastal and some not. For most of them, rivers were shown flowing into the sea, following in every case what looked like very natural and very convincing drainage patterns. This suggested, of course, that the coast may have been ice-free when the original map was drawn. The deep interior, however, was free entirely of rivers and mountains, suggesting that the ice might have been present there in this map. Closer investigation of the Rontius-Phineas map by Hapgood and by Dr. Richard Strachan of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology confirmed the following. It had been copied and compiled from several earlier source maps, drawn up according to a number of different projections. It did indeed show non-glacial conditions in coastal regions of Antarctica, notably Queen Maud Land, Enderby Land, Wilkes Land, Victoria Land, the east coast of the Ross Sea, and Marie Byrd Land. As in the case of the Peary Reese map, the general profile of the terrain and the visible physical features matched closely seismic survey maps of the subglacial land surfaces of Antarctica. Now, you're not going to be able to see this, but in this book, the map we're talking about is reproduced, and you can study it yourself. I'm reading from Fingerprints of the Gods, Graham Hancock. If you want me to continue, you better get on the telephone. Now, July 7th is an important date. It's the anniversary of our going on satellite. And on July 7th, we will add another station to the Los Angeles area as I bring Channel 31 on the air. We'll stay on Channel 31 24 hours a day. Essentially the coverage of old Channel 30. It won't start out that way. Not everybody in Los Angeles will pick it up as we come on the air, as you always do, with a authority to test. But it will stay on the air as we work through it. It won't be full power, but it's a significant date as we come back on the air on Channel 31. I'll open the service as we bring it on the air by saying, I'm still here, you sons of Belial, you. I want you in the cathedral on Sunday. You can't get to the cathedral without making reservations. You can't just walk in. I need about 300 more reservations. So use the next song to get on the phone, make reservations at the cathedral. Your commitments for double portion month, which is July. And then I'm going to return to this book and to teaching on the evidence of ancient civilizations that boggle the mind. I get on the telephone. Don't anybody call and ask why you got the girls dancing? Because I like to watch them. And I like them. And They're my friends. And I'm sticking it in the face of the fundamentalists that say, you got to stop living to be a Christian, park your brain to be a Christian, become a freak, ugly, despicable, and weird. I got a one-man crusade to prove they're full of it, including picking your brain on this, so don't give me any more calls. I play the girls dancing because they're pretty and they dance good. Got you listening, too. That's the general idea. Doptcha. The erroneous Phineas map, Hapgood concluded, appeared to document the surprising proposition that Antarctica was visited and perhaps settled by men, certainly map makers, when it was largely, if not entirely, non-glacial. It goes without saying that this implies a very great antiquity. Indeed, the Erroneous Phineas map takes the civilization of the original map makers back to a time contemporary with the end of the last ice age in the northern hemisphere, or before it started, I'd add, one or the other. Ross C. Further evidence in support of this view arises from the manner in which the Ross Sea in Antarctica was shown by Erroneous Phineas, where today great glaciers like the Beardmore and the Scott disgorge themselves into the sea. The 1531 map shows estuaries, broad inlets, and indications of rivers. The unmistakable implication of these features is that there was no ice on the Ross Sea or its coasts when the source maps used by Erroneous Phineas were made. There also had to be a considerable hinterland free of ice to feed the rivers. At the present time, all these coasts and their hinterlands are deeply buried in the mile-thick ice cap, while on the Ross Sea itself, there is a floating ice shelf hundreds of feet thick, with the glaciers breaking off. The Ross Sea evidence provides strong corroboration for the notion that Antarctica must have been mapped by some unknown civilization during the extensively ice-free period which ended around 4000 BC. This is emphasized by the coring tubes used in 1949 by one of the Byrd Antarctica expeditions to take samples of sediment from the bottom of the Ross Sea. The sediments showed numerous clearly demarcated layers of stratification reflecting different environmental conditions in different epochs: coarse glacial marine, medium glacial marine, fine glacial marine, and so on. The most surprising discovery, however, was that a number of the layers were formed of fine-grained, well-assorted sediments, such as are brought down to the sea by rivers flowing from temperate, that is, ice-free, lands. Using the Ionian dating method developed by Dr. W. D. Urey, which makes use of three different radioactive elements found in seawater, researchers at the Carnegie Institute in Washington, D.C., were able to establish beyond any reasonable doubt that great rivers carrying fine-grained, well-assorted sediments had indeed flowed in Antarctica until about 6,000 years ago, as the Erroneous Phineas map showed. It was only after that date, around 4000 BC, that the glacial kind of sediment began to be deposited on the Ross Sea bottom. The cores indicate that warm conditions had prevailed for a long period before that. I believe in Atlantis. I believe Atlantis sunk when the flood came. I believe the original antediluvians were on Atlantis. That's what Edgar Cayce said, too. But we're talking about a date going back earlier than tradition has said Adam was created. The traditions are wrong. We make void the Word of God by our traditions. These antediluvians were smart. It was a Pasadena scientist who postulated that the earth was covered by a vast canopy. And if you read the Hebrew in the creation, which I'll get to in some passages in Genesis as I continue this, it totally supports there was a space between land and something else. The Pasadena scientist, not a Bible scholar, postulated a vast canopy that covered the earth, giving it a hothouse effect, which is in conformity with the biblical record before the flood that rain had never fallen. The canopy burst, the fountains of the earth gushed out, and Atlantis sunk. More than 6,000 years ago. The Peary Reese and erroneous Phinehas maps therefore provide us with a glimpse of Antarctica as no cartographer in historical times could possibly have seen it. On their own, of course, here he gets humble again. Graham Hancock, I wish he wouldn't. On their own, of course, these two pieces of evidence should not be sufficient to persuade us that we might be gazing at the fingerprints of a lost civilization. Why not? Can three or four or six such maps, however, be dismissed with equal justification? Hell no, but you don't need that apology. Is it safe or reasonable? I mean, why don't they just say, here's my evidence, what's yours, asshole? Is it safe or reasonable, for example, for us to continue to ignore the historical implications of some of the maps made by the 16th century's most famous cartographer, Gerald Kremer, otherwise known as Mercator? Hell no. But don't walk into it backwards. I mean, get the old American eagle in the air and march right on to Mercator. Best remembered for the Mercator projection, still used in most world maps today. I got a PhD minor. You can check it out if you want. PhD minor in geography from Stanford. I understand these things. Best remembered for the Mercator projection, still used on most world maps today. This enigmatic individual who paid an unexplained visit to the Great Pyramid of Egypt in 1563 was reportedly indefatigable in searching out the learning of long ago and spent many years diligently accumulating a vast and eclectic reference library of ancient source maps. Significantly, Mercator included the erroneous Phinehas map in his Atlas of 1569 and also depicted the Antarctica on several he himself drew in the same year. Identifiable parts of the then undiscovered southern continent on these maps are Cape Dart and Cape Herlocker in Marie Birdland, the Amundsen Sea, Thurston Island in Ellsworth Land, the Fletcher Islands in the Bellingshausen Sea, Alexander the First Island, the Antarctic or Palmer Peninsula, the Weddell Sea, Cape Norvegia, the Regular Range in Queen Maud Land as islands, the Mulig Hoffman Mountains as islands, the Prince Harald Coast, The Shirazi Glacier is an estuary on Prince Harald Coast, Pada Island on Lutzow Home Bay, and the Prince Olaf Coast in Enderby Land. In some cases, I don't expect you to remember all those spots. I'm sure not going to. What is being said is the map included things that are under a mile of ice right now. And have been for 6,000 years. In some cases, these features are more distinctly recognizable than on the Orontius Phinaeus map, observed Hapgood. And it seems clear in general that Mercator had at his disposal source maps other than those used by Orontius Phinaeus. Not only Mercator, Philippe Bauche, the 18th century French geographer, was also able to publish a map of Antarctica long before the southern continent was discovered. And the extraordinary feature of Bauche's map is that it seems to have been used or been based on source maps made earlier, perhaps thousands of years earlier, than those used as source maps by Phinaeus and Mercator. What Bauche gives is an eerily precise representation of Antarctica as it must have looked when there was no ice at all. Here's the Bauche map. And no ice at all. His map reveals the subglacial topography of the entire continent, which even we did not have full knowledge of until 1958, International Geophysical Year, when a comprehensive seismic survey was carried out of all Antarctica. That survey only confirmed what Bauche had already proclaimed when he published his map of Antarctica in 1737. Basing his cartography on ancient sources now lost, the French academician depicted a clear waterway across the southern continent, dividing it into two principal land masses lying east and west of the line now marked for the Trans-Antarctica Mountains. And you can see that waterway even on this small map, going right through the middle of it there. Such a waterway connecting the Ross, Weddell, and Bellingshausen seas would indeed exist if Antarctica were free of ice, as the 1958 IGY, International Geophysical Year, survey shows. The continent, which appears on modern maps as one continuous landmass, consists of an archipelago of large islands with mile-thick ice packed between them and rising above sea level. As we've seen, many orthodox geologists believe that the last time any waterway existed in these ice-filled basins was millions of years ago. From the scholarly point of view, however, it's equally orthodox to affirm that no human beings had evolved in those remote times, let alone human beings capable of accurately mapping the land masses of Antarctica. The big problem raised by the Bauche IGY evidence is that those land masses do seem to have been mapped when they were free of ice. This confronts scholars with two mutually contradictory propositions. Which one is correct? If we are to go along with orthodox geologists and accept that millions of years have indeed elapsed since Antarctica was last completely free of ice, then all the evidence of human evolution, painstakingly accumulated by distinguished scientists from Darwin on, must be wrong. Seems inconceivable this could be the case. The fossil record makes it abundantly clear that only those so-called ancestors of humanity existing millions of years ago with a low-browed, knuckle-dragging hominids incapable of advanced intellectual tasks like map-making? Are we therefore to assume the intervention of alien cartographers in orbiting spaceships to explain the existence of sophisticated maps of an ice-free Antarctica? Or shall we think again about the implication of Hapgood's theory of Earth crust displacement, which allows the southern continent to have been in the ice-free condition depicted by Bausch as little as 15,000 years ago? Is it possible? Intelligent civilization sufficiently advanced to have mapped Antarctica could have developed by 13,000 B.C. and later disappeared? And if so, how much later? The combined effect of the Peary Reis, Orontius Finneas, Mercator, and Bausch maps is the strong, though disturbing, impression that Antarctica must have been continuously surveyed over a period of several thousands of years as the ice cap gradually spread outwards from the interior, increasing its grip with every passing millennium, but not engulfing all of the coasts of the southern continent until around 4000 B.C. The original sources for the Peary Reis and Mercator maps must therefore have been prepared towards the end of this period, when only the coasts of Antarctica were free of ice. The source for the Orontius Finneas map, on the other hand, seems to have been considerably earlier, when the ice cap was present only in the deep interior of the continent, and the source for the Bausch map appears to originate in an even earlier period, around 13,000 B.C., when there was no ice in Antarctica at all. Were other parts of the world surveyed and accurately charted at widely separated intervals during this same epoch, roughly from 13,000 B.C. to 4,000 B.C.? The answer may lie once again in the Peary Reis map, which contains more mysteries than just Antarctica. Drawn in 1513, the map demonstrates an uncanny knowledge of South America, not only of its eastern side, but of the Andes Mountains on the western side of the continent, which were, of course, unknown at that time. The map correctly shows the Amazon River rising in these unexplored mountains and thence flowing eastwards, itself compiled from more than 20 different source documents of varying antiquity. The Peary Reis map depicts the Amazon not once but twice, most probably as a result of the unintentional overlapping of two of the source documents used by the Turkish admiral. In the first of these, the Amazon's course is shown down to its Para River mouth, but the important island of Marajo does not appear. According to Hapgood, this suggests that the relevant source map must have dated from a time perhaps as much as 15,000 years ago, when the Para River was the main or only mouth of the Amazon, and when the Marajo Island was part of the mainland on the northern side of the river. The second depiction of the Amazon, on the other hand, does show Marajo, and in fantastically accurate detail, despite the fact that this island wasn't discovered until 1543. Again, the possibility is raised of an unknown civilization which undertook continuous surveying and mapping operations of the changing face of the earth over a period of many thousands of years, with Peary Reis making use of earlier and later source maps left behind by this civilization. Neither the Orinoco River nor its present delta is represented on the Peary Reis map. Instead, as Hapgood proved, two estuaries extending far inland for a distance of about 100 miles are shown close to the site of the present river. The longitude on the grid would be correct for the Orinoco, and the latitude is also quite accurate. It's possible that these estuaries have been filled in and the delta extended this much since the source maps were made. Although they remained undiscovered until 1592, The Falkland Islands appear in the on the 1513 map at their correct latitude. The Library of Ancient Sources incorporated in the P. Reese map may also account for the fact that it convincingly portrays a large island in the Atlantic Ocean to the east of the South American coast, where no such island now exists. Is it pure coincidence that this imaginary island turns out to be located right over the sub-oceanic mid-Atlantic ridge, just north of the equator and 700 miles east of the coast of Brazil, where the tiny rocks of St. Peter and Paul now jut above the waves? Or was the relevant source map drawn deep in the last ice age, when sea levels were far lower than they are today, and a large island could indeed have been exposed at this spot? How about some other 16th century maps? As I continue, if you want me to, you better get on the telephone.